I'm Jad Abumrad. This is Dolly Parton's America. Okay, so that phrase from author Helen Morales.
This was our music, right? Meaning immigrant music.
Filled me with all kinds of questions, which then...
Have we started?
Yeah.
Okay.
Led me to talk to this woman.
My name is Rhiannon Giddens, and I'm a musician, songwriter, composer now, I suppose, and all-around person at the party that you don't want to talk to because all she talks about is slavery and the banjo.
Now, the banjo is an interesting case study. Rhiannon, if you know anything about her, if you saw her on the Ken Burns special, if you know her music, you know that she plays the banjo, clawhammer style, really well.
George Buck is dead. Last word he said, don't you put no shortening in my bread.
But she didn't always.
The very first memory I have of really thinking about how awesome clawhammer banjo is was actually on a Dolly Parton song.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was her second bluegrass CD, the Little Sparrow. Or was it the third one? I can't remember. Anyway, it was the Little Sparrow. And there was that little end part of Marry Me. At the very end, it goes into this little old-time jam for like literally 5 or 10 seconds. And I would, that was always the moment I was like, oh man, that jam is so cool.
But she says when she finally started trying to get in on those jams, you know, pick up the banjo herself and sit in, as a black woman.
At the beginning, I kind of was like, well, you know, can I come in here? Can I play this music? You know, it's not like I'm just kind of sneaking in here and I'm the fly in the buttermilk, as they say, you know, at these gatherings, and feeling like I had to ask permission. And I never had to ask permission.
Take the banjo itself, she says, the true history of the banjo itself. This is something that I think collectively we're just starting to kind of reacquaint ourselves with. I mean, largely, I think, as a result of people like her bringing it back to light. But consider the banjo. You hear just a couple notes on the banjo and it immediately conjures a picture of, you know, white mountain man, East Tennessee, maybe West Virginia.
But the banjo's roots are in West Africa. There's all these West African lute instruments, and it became what we know of as the banjo in the Caribbean, right? The first, the earliest banjo we have that still exists is from Haiti.
Wow.
You know, where it is the banjo. It's got multiple long strings, a short string, and, you know, it looks like the instrument that we know of. And people brought that with them up to North America and became a part of the landscape of the enslaved life.
My old missus and my master was sleeping side by side in a little old cabin.
Now, white people didn't play the banjo for a long time. It was a plantation instrument. But what happened was that in the 1830s and 40s,
banjo solo.
The white entertainer picks up the banjo.
And from there, she says, you have an inexorable march that included 60 years of minstrelsy, the deliberate segregating of the recording industry, and the end result is that by about 1930, the banjo, which came into America as a black instrument, was suddenly solely associated with white culture.
And so then you start seeing, you know, oh, let's go back to the days of the old barn dance. You know, this clean white American music, which is a total fabrication. This is the hidden history of country music.
Rhiannon has really sort of led the way in bringing that history back to light by continually talking about it. And of course, playing in bands like the Carolina Chocolate Drops. It's a band she started with two other black musicians, Justin Robinson and Don Flemons, where they played straight-up Appalachian folk music. But what really tripped me out, kind of expanded things for me in terms of not just thinking about the Tennessee Mountain Home, the TMH, and its relationship to my dad's LMH, but just what music is at its core. Well, it's when I heard this one particular song off her latest album.
Little Margaret sitting in her high chair, combing back her long yellow hair. So sweet William and his new maid bride,
song is called Little Margaret.
That's an Appalachian ballad. And it's from the mountains of North Carolina.
I'll go down and bid him farewell. Nevermore go there.
She says she was riffing off a version by singer Sheila Kay Adams, but on Rhiannon's record, she's accompanied by a guy named Francesco Teresi, who is playing the Iranian frame drum called the daf.
It was late in the night, they were fast asleep. Little Margaret appeared all dressed in white, standing at their bed feet, saying, how do you like your snow white pillow?
We like to call it layering. We layer this upon another thing and all of the similarities peak.
When I heard this, I was like, why do these sound so right? Like, that, is there a backstory that they share?
There was no effort to it. It was like he started playing, I started singing, that was it.
Ah.
But you're right, there is this connection to where did it come from? And my whole thing is, just as within America, there are these connections that we have simplified and erased to our detriment, you know? Connecting an Appalachian ballad that was begun as an English ballad, but then what happened? Where did the English ballad come from? You know what I mean? Where did that style of melismatic singing come from? If you're talking about Celtic singing, you know, where did the modes come from, you know, of trance, say? If you ever listen to somebody sing 14 verses of an Appalachian ballad, that's trance. You hear an Iranian daf, that is a trance instrument that is used for Sufi, it's used for folk. There are these moments that remind us that we actually all come from the same source.
After talking with Rhiannon, we spoke to maybe a dozen different musicologists who told us that, yeah,
any Western instrumental tradition is indebted to the ancient Middle East.
Like, if you listen to the style of singing, the way the singers bend the notes up and down, you hear that same singing style in Appalachian balladry and the modes.
You know, the kind of modes that were used.
The beats. You hear that stuff in country music.
There absolutely were trade routes among Arab Americans that
we even learned that instruments from the area that is now Lebanon were taken into the mountains of Appalachia very early on. And some people told us the banjo?
The banjo also. All these complex lutes, whether from Europe or from Africa, all can be tied back to the Middle East.
And to be honest, a lot of what we heard was sort of exciting. It was like, yay, go team, but also kind of reductive.
Origins are really hard in music.
Like when you talk origins, it becomes a conversation about who owns it. But in fact, one of the big movements right now in music history is to not do origins. Because when you actually look at how people were actually living, there was just too much mixing.
I think that sometimes we give ourselves too much credit for having entered the age of globalization. And when we study history, we see how incredibly globalized people have been for so many centuries.
Take a whaling ship from the 19th century that might have sailed the Indian Ocean. A ship like that might have sailors from the UK, from US, Portugal, Germany, Scandinavia, Indonesia, Malaysia, Hawaii, New Zealand, Tonga, Australia, the Cook Islands, all of them with different instruments. And they're jamming because they're bored. They're teaching each other songs, exchanging instruments. How do you boil that down to one simple story?
We have this desire to reach beyond where we live, and we have this desire to reach beyond who we are and who surround us. That, to me, is the interesting story.
The human story is about migration. You know, it is about movement. It is about, you know, one group moves from A to B, and in that, they affect, and they are themselves also affected. You know, and whether it ends up in America, whether it ends up in, you know, Lebanon or whatever, it's always a story of who came through. Where did we go? Where did we come from?